Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. We're a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues, but the twist is that we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And let me introduce you to the crew. Wow. Look, I'm looking around. I'm it. I'm the only guy today. So hopefully you guys don't feel like you're stuck. I will try to make it as entertaining as possible. But I was explaining, to the people, that log in early, to our streamers that, the upside having the movers and shakers in law enforcement, the top 1% on the show is that, these guys are like, they're hot. They're in demand. They have their pulse, their finger on the pulse of the law enforcement community. They know what's going on. And the downside is that these guys are in high demand, and they're traveling all over the country. So so it is me today, because everybody else is either in conferences, they're teaching, they're in airports or on planes, or they're driving to New York like Randy Sutton. So yeah, they got a lot going on, kind of like I do. But I set aside every lunch hour for you guys 5 days a week to cover this stuff. And let's talk about our sponsors, guys. Please support our sponsors. They go to great lengths to bring this good quality content to you. We've got our title sponsor, Gulls at Gulls.com. And get ready to write it down. I'm going to give you their special discount code. It's Radio15. Next time you go to Gulls.com, type in Radio15 in order to get 15% off your next purchase. So keep that in mind. We also have ComplianTechnologies.com, our satellite sponsor. We've got GunLearner.com, MyMedicare.life, and TwoBells.com that built our new online store at Leo Roundtable. So please check that out. And you get cool gear like the mug here that I got. You can get all that, shirts, shorts, hats, all kinds of stuff at our online store at leoroundtable.com. A shout out to the guys that are allowing us to stream. We've got Brian Burns with the Tampa Free Press, Ray Dietrich, former lawman.com, and our very own Travis Shates with lawofficer.com. And, Scott Steyer, our Green Beret Delta Force operative that's on the show, wants me to keep telling people, tell them how to find the show. So, yeah, we are on, I think, every podcast platform known to man, but especially podcast and Apple iTunes, two of the most popular. And we're on social media. And I mean, again, just about everything, Rumble, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, formerly X, True Social, a lot of other ones as well. So check that out. All you have to do, the best way, go to our website, leoroundtable.com, top menu bar, tells you all the outlets, all the places we're at, dates, times, if it's a radio station, what the call sign is and the station numbers are, the dates and times of the broadcast, all that stuff. leoroundtable.com. So let me whet the appetite, tell you guys what we're going to be talking about today. I really appreciate you guys tuning in. Remember, the goal of this show, the main goal, is to make you guys among the smartest people in the room when it comes to the news, especially when it comes to a law enforcement perspective. And the first one we're going to talk about, not this second, but just in a second, Trump taps Jay Clayton to lead the U.S. intelligence following the Bitter House standoff. So I know what you guys are thinking. He just tapped somebody else. Yeah, that didn't work out. So we're going with Jay Clayton now. So stay tuned for that. But that's I think it's good news because we had our Secret Service agents on the show, talking about that. Frank Steripoli, and was letting it rip on that. So it was I guess it's Rich Steripoli and Frank Loveridge were talking about that, and they're both Secret Service guys that are regular commentators and on Fox News. So they're on every week practically. So we're talking about Jay Clayton being tapped for that job. We've also got some other ones. Former Warren police officer James Burke ends up being acquitted in a fatal 2024 crash that killed best friends. So it's a sad story, but I'm glad the cop got acquitted. We'll talk about that and why I'm glad about that. It doesn't take away from the tragedy that happened. Pasadena police officer accidentally shot by a fellow cop in a horseplay incident. So yeah, it's not what you think. It's not like they're under fire and it's accidental. No, it's pretty stupid. We've got a 15-year-old boy shot and killed during a domestic dispute, charging at officers with a knife. We'll talk about whether that could have been avoided. Cash Patel, axes FBI staffers behind a controversial Catholic extremism memo. They're still cleaning house of the FBI guys. And then we got an officer caught from multiple angles falling out of a window while attempting to climb through it. So I was really spending a lot of time trying to figure out how old this officer was, because just the way that he was moving, it looked like he was 70 some years old. And I'm just thinking, wow. Then we got a New Jersey sergeant charged with stealing a journalist's $10,000 camera gear. So that's a little embarrassing that that happened, to the profession, at least anyhow. So we got that. And then finally, we have time to get to it. Robbery suspect fatally shot by Albuquerque police officer when he raises a gun and he attempts to carjack somebody. It's kind of a wild story. We have a decent chance of covering all these items. So let's go in and get started, guys. We've got roughly 6.5 minutes before we take our first commercial break. So this first one is at the Tampa Free Press at TampaFE.com. We have President Trump tapping Jay Clayton to lead the U.S. intelligence following Bitter House standoff. So look, stuff happens. We had our two FBI, or two, I'm sorry, Secret Service guys on the show the other day, where we were talking about the tapping for our intelligence agency, and they weren't excited about it, especially Rich Scarapoli thought that it was a mistake. So look, things usually work out and happen the way they're supposed to, and I think that's what happened here. President Donald Trump announced on Thursday that he is nominating Jay Clayton to serve as the next permanent director of national intelligence. And I did stress the word permanent, because that was not what was going on with the previous appointment, from what I understand. Now, Clayton, the guy being appointed, currently works as the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York, has previously served as chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission. Now, not a spook, which is what we normally would look for. But if confirmed by the Senate, he will be tasked with overseeing the sprawling U.S. intelligence community, which includes organizations like the CIA and the NSA, Central Intelligence Agency, and the National Security Agency. Those are like, in my opinion, like the top two. The sudden announcement comes on the heels of an intense political controversy, which there has been, and boy, has there been, surrounding President Trump's temporary pick for the top intelligence role. So on Wednesday, Trump said federal housing official Bill Pulte would take over as acting director on June the 19th to replace outgoing DNI Tulsi Gabbard. So we all know Tulsi left. There's mixed signals about, the reasons why, but her husband's got, cancer. It's a rare form of cancer. She's going to leave and take care of him, help him out. I think that's honorable. Bill Pulte, with a background with federal housing and then having access and being in charge of all these intelligence communities. Intelligence is a very special world, because I did it for quite a while with Tampa. And all that hoopla and all that stuff that I went through involving a whistleblower, all that stuff, all that happened during that time in my life. So, yeah, I was a little surprised about Bill Pulte being nominated. So I'm happier with the new nomination. So Pulte's appointment immediately stalled legislative action in Congress. So here's what happened. Hours before Trump nominated Clayton, the new guy, for the permanent job, the House of Representatives, they rejected a proposal to extend a crucial national security tool past Friday. So lawmakers, they refused to back the extension of Section 702. That's with the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. And they did that directly because Trump was choosing Pulte in that intelligence role. They didn't like it, and they were trying to get back at Trump. Now, arguably, it's kind of funny because Trump has not necessarily been beating the gavel trying to keep Section 702. Remember, some of the stuff was used against Trump in a bad way. Remember the indictments and being charged and criminally convicted, all that stuff. So taking the Truth Social to announce this permanent nomination, not just a temporary, Trump described Clayton as a very highly respected individual. He urged lawmakers to quickly move on the approval process. And I know he wants to get things moving, and he's not looking to have, drama. He's got enough things going on, like Iran and Venezuela and Cuba and all these other things. So that's the latest and greatest with that. So we will watch the nomination and hopefully getting Jay Clayton confirmed, in his new role over the intelligence community. But it's a better pick, I think. So things happen for a reason. So, and I'm kind of, watching the comments too. Betty Dunn thinks I look tired. Are you doing too much? Betty, I have so much going on, but I'm not tired. I don't need a lot of sleep. I'm not as good as Trump. I need more than 3 hours sleep. Typically I can do 3 hour rolls for like a day or two, but I don't like to do that more than one or two days in a row. But no, I'm fine. And I have plenty of energy. So anyway, and Betty's bragging about being 82 and a half. She could probably, probably run circles around me. So, but thanks for watching. So guys, moving along, and I'm continuing to watch the comments here to see if there's anybody that has anything they want to interject in any of the stories that we're talking about. And, And I see that Sergeant George is actually commenting saying that it's going to be a heck of a challenge to see how Clayton's going to handle this new role. Arguably better, I think, than the other guy. So we will see. And that's, you know, we have plenty to talk about in the show. So if something goes south, we'll be talking about it. So let's go to an update article before we get to story with a video component. I have two sources that I used on this, and I'm going to tell you why in a minute. It kind of gives you a little background on what I have to do and putting the stories together. Two sources are clickondetroit.com and then fox2detroit.com. You know, I hate it when you have a news source and then you go there the first time, I let you grab the story, and then you go back and then all of a sudden you've got to pay to play, right? Don't you hate that? And the news, you know, you've got to be really, really big or have something very special to be able to charge people for it. So I hate that. So when I use sources, and when you go to our website and you look at our produced version of the show, you'll see links to the stories and the articles. You know, I like to make sure that you guys have that. And I don't want to send you to a link where you have to, you know, join or have a membership. So I use reputable sources, and I try to use the sources that don't charge for the information. So they get hits, they can have advertisers, and the more hits they get, the higher their advertising rates, you know, are. So it's a win-win for everybody without them having the tribes, you know, charge subscribers, just like me. I, you know, with running Leo Affairs, the law enforcement website, leoaffairs.ch that I just relaunched, or even running Leo Roundtable, I'm not charging subscribers. I just don't think it's the right thing to do. And I don't think the news people should do it either. So this next one, former Warren police officer James Burke acquitted in a fatal 2024 crash that killed best friends. We're talking about that next. So stick with us, guys. We have a commercial break coming up, though. We're talking about dolls. I'm giving out that discount code again. Stay tuned.
My family only cares about one thing, that I come home safe.
At Galls, every order begins with a promise. Made with purpose. Stitched for support. Backed with pride. Answered by dedicated hands. Delivering the standard you have sworn to uphold. We serve more than the mission. We serve the person. Each piece is engineered to help get our first responders through the shift and back home safe.
Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We left off talking about a news story. I've got two sources for it, but click on Detroit.com and Fox2Detroit.com. Former Warren police officer James Burke acquitted in a fatal 2024 crash that killed best friends. Now, my dad actually grew up here in Warren, Michigan, outside Detroit, and I've been there many times growing up, going up there visiting family. Still have a lot of family up there. So we're in a Macomb County, Michigan. And so a jury ended up acquitting a former Warren police officer. His name is James Burke. Of all charges, this happened on Thursday. They cleared him on two counts of involuntary manslaughter and related charges that stem from a 2024 high-speed crash that killed two people. And so this wasn't long ago. This was in 2024. So this trial happened fairly recent. And fairly quickly. Now, the crash happened September 30th, 2024, and Officer Burke was driving his patrol car at approximately 114 miles an hour. Now, I did read other details that said when the crash actually happened, you know, it was under 100. So, you know, I had to go to the two sources because I wasn't thoroughly impressed with the first one, to be honest with you. And just to kind of let you know how the process goes, the first source I use when I go to get the info on the story, guess what? It changed, and I had to, you know, click and become a member and pay them, and I bumped that. So I went and I found another source, clickondetroit.com, but they don't give a lot of the information. So I had to go to fox2detroit.com in order to get the rest of the information. So that's why you have it, you know, kind of broken up here. So as far as the alcohol level for one of the two guys who got killed, they didn't give it out, you know, and I don't know why you wouldn't give it out on clickondetroit.com. And they also didn't give out some other information, like the fact that the car, the cruiser was no longer going over 100 miles an hour. So it's almost like they want that inflammatory stuff to be in there on purpose. So So our cop's going initially over 100 miles an hour. He doesn't have his lights and sirens going, so he's just speeding and hauling butt. His cruiser slammed into a Dodge Durango that was making a left-hand turn. Now, Dodge Durango is a pretty big truck, right? So, I mean, we had two guys died, but it wasn't like he hit a little Honda Civic. So that's where the speed makes a difference. So Cedric Hayden Jr. and DeJuan Pettis, they ended up dying as a result of the collision, and apparently they were best friends with each other. Now, Officer Burke faced four charges, two counts of manslaughter with a motor vehicle, a moving violation causing serious impairment of bodily function, and then one count of willful negligent or willful neglect of duty is what it says. So after 7 days of testimony and evidence, the jury returned not guilty verdicts on all four counts. Wow. Now, the trial. Now, remember, now we're talking about criminal, even, you know, so did what the cop do? Should it have resulted in criminal charges, you know, like some serious stuff like manslaughter, stuff like that? The trial centered entirely on one question. Did Officer Burke's high-speed driving constitute criminal gross negligence, or was the crash an unavoidable accident that was caused by an impaired driver? Ah, so they throw the impaired driver flag up. And of course, like I said, our first article never touched on it again. But they, but you know, I saw the flag there and I had to research it with another source. Well, guess what I found out? It's unfortunate these two guys in the Durango got killed, but the driver, Hayden Jr., had a blood, and this has been proven in court, according to the article. He had a blood alcohol level of 0.198, which is more than twice the legal limit. 0.198, more than twice the legal. So another issue called in the question was the left turn that Hayden Jr. made. And it said that then they had a accident reconstructionist testified that the turn was illegal because it was made too early and that the Durango crossed into potential oncoming traffic. That's a significant factor, you know, when the officer ended up, you know, hitting the truck and killing him. So you got an impaired driver, which means that his reflexes, you know, were not up to speed or up to par where they should have been. He turns in front of the oncoming cruiser, which means that he didn't really have the impairment would have hindered him from judging the speed of the vehicle, whether he had time to pull in front of it. And then it was illegal to turn anyhow. So prosecutors argued that Officer Burke operated the car or his cruiser with gross negligence, telling jurors the crash did not have to happen. But defense attorneys for the officer countered that Hayden, the driver, was heavily intoxicated, made an improper, unexpected turn directly in front of the cruiser. So they also argued that Officer Burke acted entirely within his training. So that's what we have. And then they also say, of course, the civil suit is still pending. So even though we got cleared on the criminal, we still have a civil suit. I suspect they're probably going to try to go after the officer, but the qualified immunity might come in, not definitely, but might come in. And it says that Figure Law has filed two separate $100 million wrongful death lawsuits in Macomb County Circuit Court against the city and the officers involved. So there you go. And one on behalf of Cedric Hayden Jr. and the other one on the behalf of the other guy, DeJuan Pettis' family. So, you know, these things are, they're sad. And, you know, I don't know, they don't give a lot of information on why this officer was going this fast. Was he trying to get to a call? Was he just not running lights and sirens? Because, you know, there's a lot of calls that we go to where you don't run lights and sirens on. You don't want the bad guy, you know, to know that you're coming. So they don't give out a lot of information, but did it rise to the level of criminal? And I don't believe that it did. But notice that the guy's no longer caught there either. So I suspect that he ended up being fired from the agency, but it didn't say. So there you go. So now you guys are among the smartest people in the room on this, and you're getting the information from two different sources that I had to go to in order to get the stuff. But the guy was impaired. That automatically is going to put responsibility on that driver, because now that driver became a bad guy because he should have never gotten behind the wheel and driven. You know, that's why we have laws against that. So that said, guys, I've got a little less than a minute and a half before we go to our next commercial break. So let me go in and whet the appetite on the next story. There is a video component to this. It is involving a horseplay incident. And I'm not going to throw the first stone on this. We live in glass houses. I've been involved in horseplay with the police department. I've got jammed up on a horseplay thing before, so I'm not going to throw a lot of stones here, but it's a little embarrassing. So the story is coming from rumble.com. This is Butter is the channel. It's our favorite law enforcement video channel. We have Pasadena police. So we're in California. You know, they like to have a good time. This officer accidentally was shot by a fellow cop in a horseplay incident. It didn't go down like you might think. And just to whet the appetite on this, in Pasadena, California, we have dash cam. It shows a Pasadena police officer getting shot by a fellow officer and what the chief described as a horseplay incident. I wouldn't necessarily say it was friendly fire. When you guys hear how this thing went down, you're going to be, some of you may wonder why the officer, one of the officers didn't even get fired, but we'll cover that. They're both still working there from what I understand. We'll be right back. All right, guys. And it's time to talk about our satellite sponsor, Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com. And they are committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low-optics manner, utilizing what they call their CD3, which stands for Conductive Distraction and De-escalation Device Technology. Now, their flagship product, we all know by now, is called the Glove. It's not only helped officers tens of thousands of times, but they've actually had over 250,000 deployments. And guess what? No injuries, no deaths. It's an amazing statistic. They've actually achieved non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. And when it comes to weapons retention, transitioning to a sidearm or a conductive energy weapon, the Glove of ComplianTechnologies.com, they have virtually eliminated weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Compliant Technologies and the revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already tuned to nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most common sense, hands-on solutions that's ever come along. Go to ComplianTechnologies.com today. Tell them the chip sent you. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. And we left off talking about a horseplay incident. It's in California. We're going to get to it. I'm getting ready to go to California in the end of September and beginning of October, and I'll be in Carmel. But this is in Pasadena. So this is from Rumble.com. This is Butters, the name of the channel. Pasadena police officer accidentally shoots a fellow cop in a horseplay incident. So we have a dash cam of this, and I'm going to go ahead and try to set the stage visually so you guys can see. I know you're not looking at the video, but until the video portion of this thing comes out at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, I'm going to go in and give you a verbal word picture on what went down. So this dash cam shows this Pasadena police officer, and he's by himself. He's in a cruiser that has a dash cam. He pulls into a police parking garage. There's police cars everywhere. And when he pulls in, there are two guys in uniform. They're young, and they're standing at the rear of the police car that belongs to one of them. So this cruiser pulls up, and you can't see the guy on the inside of the cruiser because, you know, we're looking at this through the dash cam. But you do see one of the two guys standing behind the car that the cruiser pulls up behind. And the guy on the right looks at the dude driving in the cruiser with the dash cam. He draws his gun from the holster, and he points it at the guy in the driver's seat. And then he reholsters it, and he's done. Well, unbeknownst to us that we can't see because it's really not on camera. Well, you can't see it until you see the bullet fly through the windshield. But the cop on the inside, these guys are screwing with each other. The cop on the inside of the cruiser pulls his gun out of the holster, and he points it at the guy that just pointed the gun at him. Well, guess what happens? There's a discharge. The gun fires. The bullet goes through the windshield. It actually strikes the same cop that had just drawn down on him. It hits him in the shoulder. So much for shooting through windshields cannot be effective. And I know it wasn't intentional, but it did enough to put the guy, you know, to shoot him in the shoulder. So you hear the gunshot. This guy that gets shot, he grabs his shoulder and he walks around to the side of the driver's side of the vehicle. There's the other young cop there with him, and he's holding. Then they realize that something happened. The guy that shot him gets out of the cruiser and runs up trying to give medical assistance. So that's the way this thing goes down. Everybody's in shock, but, you know, a good part of this is on video. Yeah, the article says a bullet traveled through the windshield, struck the other officer in the shoulder. The shooting happened in September, but the department released the video on Wednesday. It wasn't like they exactly got ahead of it, but, you know, they have to release it at some point. So they've held on to this for 9 months. The police chief said that the officer who was shot has since recovered and that disciplinary action has been taken against the officer that shot, you know. So, and maybe against both of them, because, you know, the one that got shot did draw down on the first officer and kind of like started it, you know. They were both in the wrong, but I'm kind of curious what the discipline was or whether the guy that drew down in the first place, if it was just kind of like time served, you know, because he ended up getting shot by the original officer. I don't know. But yeah, look, I'm just glad no one got seriously injured. getting shot in the shoulder is not too cool. It could have been a disabling injury where he wouldn't have been able to finish his police work or police career and stuff. So I'm glad it didn't happen, you know, any worse. But now you guys are familiar with that story. And I bet you didn't hear about that story until you just heard it from me. And it's brand new. So guys, moving along, we've got roughly about 7 minutes before we take our next commercial break. So let's go to another story that is a video component. You know, I know you guys, I have friends that watch the show. They wait until the produced version comes out the next morning at 9 o'clock. And they love to watch the videos that are embedded into it. And they will, you know, under the video, we have timestamps where you just click on it. It tells you what the stories are. You can click on it. It takes you directly to the story, or you can look at the timestamp and scroll yourself. But we have that hypertext link. It'll take you right to it. So you can actually, if we talk about six topics, and you just want to look at two of them, you can do that right from the clickable links. So we have a 15-year-old boy. This is also at Rumble on This Is Butter's channel. 15-year-old boy shot and killed during a domestic dispute. He charged at an officer with a knife.
Okay, Aiden, come on.
No.
Aiden.
No.
Aiden.
No. Hey. No.
Guys,
no.
I need you.
No. No.
Aiden. Aiden. Hold the air.
Aiden,
come on, man. Come on, man, just talk to me. Just talk to me, dude. Talk to me, bro. Talk to me, bro. Please, dude. Please. Get on the ground. Get on the ground. Come on. Shots fired.
Look, the title alone tells you that this is a tragic story, and this kid had a lot of stuff going on. I don't know everything that was going on, but he was definitely disturbed in a mental crisis, no doubt. So we're in Fraser, Michigan, and we have three Fraser police. So Fraser is Fraser. I'm not really that familiar with the agency, but the officers end up getting a domestic dispute call when a 15-year-old was fatally shot. And they have been cleared in the investigation, and they're going to return the duty. Now, the Macomb County Sheriff's Office, they were actually in charge of doing the investigation that involved the Fraser Police Department. So the SO investigated the PD. Now, the sheriff is Anthony Wickersham, and he gave a report on Wednesday following up on the May 30th incident at the home of the teen and the grandmother. So we really have two things that happened, but this whole incident that we're talking about today, there's body cam and stuff. It's really the response back to the residents. So they initially, on May 30th, they get a call at the house. The teen is living with his grandmother, actually, and she had guardianship of the boy. So that automatically is a huge flag. This kid has some stuff going on in his life. When he's got to live with grandma, there's stuff going on, right? So the Macomb County Sheriff's Office has been tasked with investigating what happened, and they started releasing the circumstances. So about 2:30 p.m., police responded to a report of a domestic dispute at the home. The officers from the Fraser Police Department arrived. The teen had left the home. They found him, and they took him to the police station. They were trying to put him somewhere else. They were obviously aware of some stuff going on in this home situation that they were trying to solve, but they couldn't get anybody else to take him in. They ended up taking him back to grandma's house, okay? So that's how we get to where the bad stuff goes down. So now all of a sudden the body cam, that's just the history. So we're back at the house. Now we have body cam, and you hear this kid just like screaming from inside, and he's got a knife in his possession. When you see him, he's going to have the knife, but he's just wailing and screaming. And he's just like, it's like he's dying, but he's just got these, he's in mental distress. So he's armed with a knife. We have body cam showing the officers. There's at least three of them. They're using tasers on him. Now they go inside the house, and I'm looking for grandma to kind of see why. Cause in these, you know, we have a thing called officer created jeopardy. I'm not saying that happened here, but I'm just saying that, you know, in today's world with our training and knowing everything that we know that there are some things we can do that can kind of, you know, escalate a situation. Even using less lethal can do that. You start firing beanbag rounds or tasers at people and they don't want it done. It can easily escalate it. They're going to want it to end. So they're going to charge you, try running away, throw things at you, all that kind of stuff. So, but they entered the home, and I was looking to see where grandmother was, and I couldn't find her, see her, hear from her. I don't know where she was at. So I was trying to see why they were forced in the situation. Were they worried that he was going to stab her? Was she in a room that she couldn't get out of and he was blocking her way or whatever? So I didn't see any evidence of that, but I'm not privy to all the facts. So there could be something going on that I'm unaware of. I kind of hope that there was. So they end up forcing their way into this home. Now they're doing the taser and stuff. The kid's not dropping the knife. He goes back into a bedroom. And so now this officer with the taser that's got the main body cam, he leaves the other two officers in the doorway. And he now he's on the other side of this bedroom door where he's already fired taser probes at the kid, which were ineffective, by the way. So the kid comes out, and he's a 15-year-old, so he is a kid, but he's in distress. He comes out of that doorway. Well, now the cop that has already fired the taser, and you can see the wires from the taser probes, or they're out, and maybe at least one of them's attached to the kid, but like I said, they're ineffective. The kid comes out with a knife, but he's between the cop on the other side of the door and the two cops that are in the doorway, and he starts charging at the two cops in the doorway. Well, our cop that's on the other side of the doorway, the one with the taser, even if he had lethal, it's a crossfire situation, you know. So he's in a role to hurt. One of the two cops ends up firing, and I'll get to that point in a second, you know. But the backdrop was the cop with the taser, so it was a dangerous situation as far as backdrops go. So Wickersham showed body cam. This is the sheriff, and he showed photos, including views of the teen holding a knife. And his shouts to police officers to leave me alone, and one of the officers pleading for him to drop the knife, which of course he never did. The sheriff also said investigators determined from the video clips that the teenager had approached the officer in training, who was present at one point, and he was very close to that officer. So one of the veteran officers fired his weapon four times during the confrontation, and three of the bullets struck the teenager, and he ended up dying at the hospital. But I will tell you, from the video, you can clearly see that the veteran officer that fired, and I don't know where the fourth bullet went, three hit the bad guy, but behind the bad guy, the kid charging, was a cop with a taser. And that's scary. So I'm glad the veteran officer made the call, was a good enough shot to where the backdrop, even though it wasn't ideal, but you always have to be aware of that. Whenever you step on the other side of a doorway, you got an armed guy. Now that anything that goes on, there's a huge crossfire situation. So the other guys can't necessarily protect you and you can't protect them, which can easily happen. So you always have to plan ahead, you know, and keep these backdrops, you know, clear. So I would have much rather these guys maybe articulate why they're going in. I wish I had that information in the article, because if grandma wasn't there and in distress or likely to be seriously injured or killed, why force incident? Get counselors, take your time, seal up the house, quarantine it, you know, contain the scene. Guys, we got less than 10 seconds. We're going to be going back to our commercial break. We'll be back in just a couple. Here we go. All right, guys, it's time to talk about GunLearn at GunLearn.com. But there's some new information, so pay attention if you haven't heard about the college credits. That's correct. Now, GunLearn, if you're not familiar with GunLearn.com, they are the first and the only company that offer a step-by-step program that takes you from your present knowledge level to become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist. Now, here's the deal, and here's what's changed. That certified firearm specialist certification I just mentioned, well, now it's worth college credits. Why? Because GunLearn.com, they have partnered with Smarter Degree and their university partners. And even if you got that certification 5 years ago, now it's worth college credits. And they've been doing this back since 1996. They've been teaching everything that LEOs, which is law enforcement officers, need to know about firearms and ammunition to all facets of law enforcement. Now you can start today with online training, or you can sign up to attend a live seminar. And if you have your own agency, you can even host a seminar for absolutely no cost. Go to gunlearn.com to get more information, gunlearn.com. Welcome back, Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. And, you know, we've been talking about this story from rumble.com. This is Butter's channel. 15-year-old boy shot and killed during a domestic dispute, and he charged at officers with a knife. You know, the first time the cops showed up, remember when the kid had left the house, they took him to the police station. They couldn't find anywhere else for him to live. We don't have the information on why they wanted him to stay somewhere else, if there was a conflict going on with him, grandma, or maybe he didn't like living by the rules or whatever. But, you know, they had to take him back to grandma's house. So that little thing could have changed this whole scenario. I don't, you know, that could have been what threw him in crisis. And also, I wish they put more information in the report about the cops, why they force entry into the house to deal with the kid. You know, was grandma, was she being threatened, or was there a likelihood of great bodily injury or harm to her? So some stuff we don't have, but these guys were cleared and it was done by the sheriff's office. I have no reason to think that it wasn't a bona fide good investigation. So, and at the end of the day, we got three cops that have to live with the taking of a life, which is, I guarantee you, is going to be it's going to be tough for these guys. They you can tell on the video they did not want anything bad to happen to this kid. So so that said, guys, we're going to move on to the next story then. And the one I've got that I'm holding here next, we've got, there are ramifications at the FBI still. So the Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com, our buddy Brian Burns runs that publication. Patel axes FBI staffers behind controversial Catholic extremism memo. It's still, the fallout is still happening. So the fallout from a notorious 2023 FBI intelligence memo reached a climax on Friday as several analysts involved in its creation were fired. These are not FBI agents. These are analysts, guys. So they work for the FBI, but they're civilian analysts. Now, the terminations mark the latest wave in accountability and staff departures under the Bureau's current director, Kash Patel. So you got to respect that. You know, think about, you know, we've got a new FBI. It's not the FBI that we had back with Trump 1.0 and that we had weaponizing, you know, law enforcement against, you know, our current president, right? It's the new FBI, but only because they have been purging this place, and they're not done. The firing stemmed from a January 23 document produced by the FBI's Richmond field office. The internal product sought to link what they labeled as radical traditionalist Catholic ideology to radically motivated violent extremists. So don't forget about that, guys. There's been some time, and we forget about stuff like this, but don't. It suggested new avenues for surveillance and source development within houses of worship. Are you kidding me? The document immediately became a political lightning rod. Congressional Republicans repeatedly pointed to the memo as glaring evidence that federal law enforcement, under the Biden administration at least, was weaponizing its power to target conservatives and religious Americans. So this should concern everybody. And I don't care what side of the aisle you're on. When the memo first leaked, top officials scrambled to do damage control. Then the director was Christopher Wray. He retracted the document. And then Attorney General Merrick Garland stated that he was appalled by it. But what happened? Nothing. In an internal review later, they conceded that the authors failed to adhere to basic analytical standards and properly link religious practices to violent extremism. Without sufficient evidence, they created the appearance that the FBI was targeting citizens based on their religious affiliation. And in 2024, the Justice Department Inspector General report claimed that there was no evidence of malicious intent or an improper purpose. Nothing happened. Because previous reviews characterized the incident as bad tradecraft, it kind of goes on to into the legal mumbo jumbo stuff, but nothing happened. But it's happening now. And now they're getting rid of analysts. So if you're caught up in that, if you did the raid on Mar-a-Lago, if you were drafting or approving this stuff, your job is at risk, guys. And I love it. I think there needs to be accountability, and I'm a huge accountability guy. So anyhow, that's what we've been dealing with. We got 5.5 minutes, and I am still jumping around. And no, Bill VC, you are stuck with me today. That is because we have everybody's in high demand on the show, and sometimes it's just the luck of the draw. And these guys are doing conferences on planes, traveling here, traveling there. So, but thanks for watching the show. We appreciate it. So I have another one here, and this one I believe has got a video component. It does. You guys are going to want to, this is one of the videos you're going to want to watch tomorrow when it comes out at 9 o'clock Eastern time on our Rumble channel called Leo Roundtable. So we get the video from Rumble as well. That channel is, this is better. Officer caught from multiple angles falling out of a window while attempting to climb through it.
Tracy, go pepper police.
How did you do that, big dog?
Can you just open the door for me?
Golly.
You good?
Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, just open the door. That'd be smart.
And this is in Culpeper, Virginia. I got to admit that when I saw the video, the officer looked like he might have been older. I tell you, the way he was moving and trying to get, he made a comment about the guy that went through the window ahead of him. He couldn't duplicate. He just couldn't bend. He couldn't bend. He looked like a 70-some-year-old man that's from the outside trying to get into an elevated window to get through it. And it was just, I was watching, saying to myself, if this dude's really this old, this just goes along a perfect justification with what I always say. You don't want old people doing law enforcement because the bad guys are always 18 to 21. That doesn't change. And old, you don't want, you know, you just don't want old guys. Even, you know, I got out of the game at 51 and I think I had a good 10 years left in me, you know, but I was a fitness trainer, all this stuff. But even then, you know, you got to get out. You never, guys felt like us. We never see it. They have to force us out. So an officer's caught from multiple angles, falling out of a window while attempting to climb through it, prompting friendly jokes from his department and others. And this is just the banter that goes on, but they're going to bring the fire department in on this too. The Culpeper Police Department posted, they compiled videos showing the moment the officer slipped out of the window. And they said that we call this particular move the sudden rapid tactical descent. They were brutal. How'd you like to be this officer showing up at roll call? And then every time you see one of your firefighter brothers or sisters, you know, they're giving it to you too. So in the video, they're responding, they're doing a welfare check of a resident that suffered from a medical emergency, and they're trying to enter through the window. And this officer it's obvious. He's having all kinds, I think they've got body cam, other cams. They've got a lot of video and they got pictures of this. This officer, he is not comfortable trying to bend this way. His body's not letting him bend this way. And sure enough, when he grabs onto the framing, he gets one leg up on the windowsill and he's just trying to bend his body to get through. The body position he was using to try to do it, this guy, I mean, it's not the way you do it. So, I mean, any one of us looking at it, we're going to say, well, this is going to go south because he just didn't have, he wasn't limber enough to get through the window. He grabs on the side. It looks like the wood gives a little bit. And it's just like that slow motion fall backwards. It's an elevated window. I suspect this house was like up on elevated like stilts or crawl space or something because he had a decent fall. He was uninjured though. So in addition to the light jokes, the Culpeper Volunteer Fire Department, so small agency, you know, they have a volunteer fire department. They posted a video presenting a tip to get through windows. And even the firefighters are saying, hey, we got firefighter Cody that'll help teach you guys how to get in windows and stuff. You know, really ultimate embarrassment for this guy. So you've got to watch the video though. And at least look, if he got hurt, I don't know if I would be shown or not, but at least the cop, you know, didn't get hurt. And I suspect that he won't do this. I don't think he's got the physical ability to be able mobility to do this kind of, you know, stuff, at least going through windows and stuff. I really would love to hear how old this guy is. If he's old, he needs to get out of law enforcement. If he's not, they need to hook him up with a trainer and he needs to work on flexibility. That's a given because he's just going to get injured. And so I got Bill BC Green, 55 should be the limit. Oh, wow. And sudden rapid tactical descent from Bill BC. And as Mark Levine, analyst. Yeah. Analyst, you know, yeah. Well, we got a few openings for analysts now with the FBI. So, all right, guys. So that's almost all I got. I'm just trying to see if there's anything waiting in the grid here. We have from unbiasedtimes.org, New Jersey sergeant charged with stealing a journalist's $10,000 camera gear. The weird thing is that who this guy worked for, we've got Delaney Hall, Daryl Brown, a 43-year-old sergeant with the Essex County Prosecutor's Office. So he doesn't work for the PD or the SO. He works for the prosecutor's office. That can happen. Angelina Katsansis on May the 30th. In any ICE protest, she's a journalist covering it. She gets injured, and then the camera equipment goes missing. But I believe that. I think she had like an air. Let me see how they got this here. We had the gear was she was covering an anti ICE protest. She was injured. They later discovered her missing bag using a geo tracking device, and it led authorities to Sergeant Brown's home. New Jersey Attorney General Jennifer Davenport announced the charges on Thursday. Theft of a disservice of the profession. And he faces 3 to 5 years in prison and a $15,000 fine. Wow. So that happened as well. So there you go. We covered everything. All right, guys. Well, glad you guys watched the show. I do want to mention the Wounded Blue at woundedblue.org. Lieutenant Rainey Sutton's 501c3 that's helping cops out in the world of hurt. So please check them out for support. Also, don't forget about the new leoaffairs.ch that I have launched. If you want to be able to talk about things going on within your agency anonymously without the fear of repercussion, leoaffairs.ch. Our sponsors, guys, please support them. We have goals.com. Don't forget Radio 15 is that discount code. ComplyTechnologies.com, GunLearn.com, Medicare.life, and TubeBells.com. We'll look for you guys back on Monday, 12 noon Eastern, for the live show.